This episode is brought to you by Fetch. Fetch is a kennel alternative right here in Denver, not a traditional doggy daycare or boarding school. They offer one-on-one private pet care for all kinds of pets, both furry and non-furry. And their employees are experienced, insured, bonded, and background checked, so you can rest easy knowing your pet is in good hands. Basically, they know pets. I used to watch a Burmese mountain dog named Sven, who was just like walking a polar bear. It was insane. Fetch offers pet sitting, dog walking, pet taxi, medication administration, and more. And he hated going on walks. I could like walk him around the block and then he was like, he just liked to lay in the bathtub. So if you're looking for high quality pet care you can trust, check out Fetch at northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. That's northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. Today on CityCast Denver. A little over 50 years ago, city leaders made a really big decision. There had been a massive flood on the Cherry Creek, and instead of rebuilding, they bulldozed the entire Auraria neighborhood and built a massive college campus in its place. And then many Denverites forgot about it. But the displaced Aurarians sure didn't. Denver Post reporter Elizabeth Hernandez is on today to explain why they're still fighting and how they keep winning. Today is Monday, April 8th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. So we're talking about something that happened decades ago. Why did you want to report on this 50-plus-year-old story now?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, History Colorado did this memory workshop, which they are doing with different historic things, I guess, across Colorado. And it's kind of a conservation thing where they're trying to archive people's memories of a place where they grew up or a moment in time. And so I attended one of these memory workshops, and so many people who used to live in the Auraria neighborhood came to this and were just sharing the most amazing memories. I have just never heard people talk about a neighborhood with such reverence and such pride. And I thought, I don't think a lot of people know about this. I didn't really know about it. And I really wanted to tell that story of what this place was and what it is now.
So I want to talk about what it is now. We need to talk about the players here. Like, who are these displaced Aurarians sort of up against? Like, who's the other entity here?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Auraria board is made up of people from the three different higher education institutions, and also developers. So there's developer, like Denver developers, who, you know, are interested in expanding and building out the campus and what the future of the campus looks like. And it is a pretty prime spot right in downtown Denver. So there's a lot to consider about what is this going to look like in the future, and what role do the displaced Aurarians have in that?
And this other entity is sort of, it's we'll refer to it as AHEC, I think, later in the conversation, but it's the Auraria Higher Education Center.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the entity that oversees. I know it's much more complicated than that, but.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
We're talking, like you said, three college campuses exist on this. There's a lot of real estate.
Right, yeah.
And they're kind of the governing
of the buildings and the facilities and things like that. Yeah.
Like you said, you've talked to a lot of these folks that identify as displaced Aurarians, who still, this is their identity to this day. Can you tell me about some of the folks that you met and how they talk about their neighborhood?
Yeah, the neighborhood they describe is something that I've never experienced today. It's a place that sounds like out of a movie where everybody knew everybody. It was a largely working class Latino neighborhood where everyone walked everywhere and, you know, families had lived there for generations and people looked after the neighborhood children as if they were their own, and all the children grew up playing together. And so when they come together for something like a board meeting where they're still showing up advocating for their neighborhood, it's like a family reunion. It's like, oh my God, I haven't seen you in 30 years. And that is something really cool to witness. So even after all of these years, and you can still tell, like, families will talk about, you know, we were displaced in 1970, and, you know, because of that, I had to drop out of school to take care of my siblings because our childcare was suddenly upended, and, you know, my parents lost their job. And it's just like generations of what happened to these families is still impacting people today.
That is such a clear description. I think what the term gentrification gets thrown around a lot. And generally we're talking, I mean, it can be a lot of things, cultural changes, land development and all those kinds of things. But what you're describing is the community aspect, which is, like you said, my childcare is upended. It's not just, we'll move you to a new place, but are you going to bring my whole community with that and find the same, are they going to be in the same proximity that they were that made the childcare possible? I mean, I think that that really gets to what made this so disruptive for these folks.
Exactly.
It reminds me a little bit of, are you familiar with the Chavez Ravine story in Los Angeles?
No.
Similar neighborhood situation, very tight knit, and they were displaced to build the Dodger Stadium. Very, very similar experience. Also, a lot of folks of color, a lot of Spanish-speaking folks. I mean, unfortunately, yeah. This is sort of the tale as old as gentrification. But I just think it's important to talk about that part because it's not just we miss our old house.
Totally. Right? Yeah.
Like we miss our actual neighbor being our neighbor.
Right.
So you reported recently on a pretty tense meeting between the displaced agrarians and this AHEC group. What happened at that meeting?
Yeah, so the Aurarians came to talk in public comment at the end of the meeting because AHEC is doing their master plan for sort of the future of what is this campus going to look like. And the displaced Aurarians felt that they were not consulted on what that looks like. And they want to have a say in what happens to 9th Street and the conservation of the area. And they want to be consulted. They want to have a voice. And so that's what was going on is they came with a list of demands and said, we want a bigger say in what happens here. So the board did postpone the vote on the master plan. And now it's kind of waiting to see, I guess, what happens if there is more consultation or what.
So a master plan is kind of like a bigger picture vision for an area. So it might determine what kinds of things can happen on real estate or what the neighborhood looks like in the future. And they're saying, we didn't get a say in this next version of Auraria.
Correct.
Does AHEC have any obligation to listen to these folks?
I think a lot of the people on the board want to. I think that there is a desire and an understanding, especially in the last few years, as a lot of institutions and organizations have kind of reflected on their past and tried to do some form of like reparations or make amends in some way for decisions that they've made in the past. That's kind of a common theme in the past few years. And a lot of these institutions have done that. There's been these scholarship programs where descendants of displaced Aurarians can go to school at any of these three colleges for free. There's been, you know, events that they've held for the displaced Aurarians. So I think there is a desire to work with them. What that's going to look like, I don't know.
Yeah, and I could see somebody saying, well, okay, AHEC's done a lot. They have this scholarship program, like you said, that, I mean, 9th Street Park still exists,
right?
Which is sort of an homage to the neighborhood. It's a piecing together of older structures from the Auraria community. And St. Cajetan's Church is still so prominent on the campus. It's a community space. The congregation itself actually moved over to West Denver in my neighborhood. There's a new, quote, new St. Cajetan's. But I could see someone saying, isn't that enough?
Right. Yeah, and I think a lot of these displaced Aurarians say no, that is not enough. So it's just kind of this tension between the folks who used to live here and the people asking, what is this community going to become, and trying to find some middle ground between that.
Yeah, there was a great quote in your piece from an activist from the displaced Aurarians group, Virginia Castro, who said, it's disappointing because everybody greets you with a smile on their face and you start feeling like they understand. But when it comes to really making something happen for the benefit of the displaced community, they make it a struggle and don't want you to move further. What else did you hear from folks in these conversations or this meeting?
I heard from people that they did feel hopeful because there was acknowledgement in the meeting that they even existed, that they were here and that they wanted to work together. And for some people, even that was just like, wow, thank you so much for recognizing us, for mentioning us in this meeting. I think for a long time, the displaced Aurarians have felt so unheard and just so, there's so much distrust that even something like that went a long way. And then there was also skepticism of, can we trust these people? We don't know. We would like to, but we feel like we've been lied to in the past. So I think there's a lot of repairing to be done.
Do you think that that seems possible with the AHEC group, that repairing or addressing this struggle that Virginia talked about?
I don't know. I think that that's what we're waiting to see.
So we talked a little bit about the master plan, but as we speak, there's a massive development planned right now just across the street from this campus in the Ball Arena parking lots. It's all pretty close. It's hard to envision sometimes because there's roads running through it, but it's all sort of close to each other, and it's part of the Auraria neighborhood, and it's going to include 155 acres of mixed-use development. It essentially is going to build a whole new neighborhood. And I want to ask you about this quote that you pulled from the guiding document from this master plan. It said, "The campus sits on some of Denver's most valuable, contiguous, underutilized land assets. AHEC also has broad authority to partner with the private sector to unlock land value and create new streams of revenue." Why did that strike you?
I think in Denver, there is this conversation that obviously has been going on for many decades about development and redevelopment and urban renewal and what that looks like and what you owe to people and who live there already. And that brings up conversations of gentrification, but also, you know, there's housing issues that need to be solved, and there is this campus that does need to serve its students. So it is a complex, nuanced conversation.
It's interesting you brought up Urban Renewal Authority. Denver Urban Renewal Authority is the entity that basically was put in charge of displacing these folks, removing what was there and putting in something new. So I can see, I don't want to put myself into it, but I can see the hesitation from the community being like, is this going to happen? Is something similar going to happen to us again? You know, it's hard because they don't live there anymore.
Right.
And why do you think that matters so much to them? They don't live there anymore. People don't really live on the campus.
When people talk about Auraria, they talk about it as if they still live there. It is such a part of who they are. It's almost an identity because it was so formative for them. That's where they grew up. That's where they formed these relationships and friendships. That's where their grandparents lived and, you know, where their stores were and their businesses. And when they were displaced, you know, people went where they had to go or where they could go, but it wasn't really a choice that they had. So I think most people really identify with the Auraria neighborhood still.
What do you think keeps that idea alive, or that this, I don't want to say it's a mythical place now, but it's something from the past. What keeps Auraria alive to these folks?
I think it's just the love. Like, I think when they talk about it, it's the relationships. They're, you know, this was the tree that I climbed when I was a kid, and this is where I sat on the porch and played jacks, and, you know, my grandmother braided my hair here, and all of these things. Like, that's what they remember growing up, and that's what's important to them.
So I have to ask one thing, because I thought it was so interesting in the piece. I got a lot of parking tickets on the campus, Auraria campus, when I was going to school there. One of the things that displaced Aurarians want is free accessible parking on campus for displaced Aurarians and descendants. How important do you think that is for them?
They mention it every time. And I think, you know, it's really crazy because people still go to 9th Street who lived there. They will go and bring lunch for their family and show their grandkids and say, like, this is where I grew up. And people visit it almost like a grave or something of, I want to show you this place. So I know for a lot of people, it does feel inaccessible to come there and pay for parking or to find parking. It can be really hard to find parking right down there as well. So I know that that is something that they mention every meeting.
I feel that a little bit as a person that grew up here in Denver and just being like, I have my parking spots that make it accessible to see the things that I'm used to going to see. Or like you said, not to think of it as a cemetery, but like, I just want to be able to pull up with my family and have a picnic in my old neighborhood. And I don't want to have to go through a parking garage to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is there anything that they have told you in these conversations with the displaced Aurarians that really made you want to visit, or something that really stuck with you personally?
Yeah, this is a story that has stuck with me personally, because I think in reporting on this, so many of the people felt like I was finally giving voice to this issue that for so long they felt like people weren't paying attention to. And that was really an honor for me to do. And so I think, you know, just doing that, I felt a lot of pride in telling their story. And it was a story that just seems to never really end. People just continue to contact me about it and say, you know, oh, wow, my uncle lived here too. Or, you know, I remember visiting my grandpa here too. So it's one of those stories that just never seems to end and people are just so connected to.
And kind of welcomes you into the story.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to learn more about it too. And, you know, I've walked the area so many times with people who used to live there. And it's just a really contagious feeling to have to feel so much nostalgia with them and to kind of go down memory lane with them and imagine this place that is no longer.
So the bureaucracy around this is still happening. We're still in this conversation about this master plan. And like I said, this big development that's happening all around it. What are you watching for? What should we be paying attention to next when it comes to the Auraria community?
Yeah, I'm waiting to see what happens with the master plan and whether the Aurarians are given some form of voice or a seat at the table in that and what that looks like. I know they want like a committee to be able to make decisions specifically for 9th Street. So I'm waiting to see if that happens or kind of what input they get as far as the master plan.
We'll be watching that for sure as well. Elizabeth Hernandez, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell your favorite Auraria Higher Education Center board member about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See you later. I guess Pop-Tarts are different. They're just like, I guess I'll eat this. Versus a toaster strudel, which is like, I get to eat this.